Lord, may these words that I speak and the meditation of my heart be acceptable and pleasing in your sight. Amen. In April of 2020, National Geographic produced a flip issue of their magazine, basically two issues in one, to explore two different, starkly different futures for our planet. One half of the magazine, this half, presented the worst case scenario, what planet Earth would look like in 50 years if we did nothing substantive about climate change. The writer described a grim, dangerous world of mass extinctions, searing bushfires, deadly heat waves, fierce storms, and widespread suffering for the human race. The other half portrayed a more hopeful vision. What planet Earth could look like in 50 years if we harness our time, ingenuity, resources, technology, now or then, to undo at least some of the damage that we've already done? In this scenario here, we would find sustainable ways to feed ourselves. We'd clean up our oceans, our rivers, our lakes. We'd provide carbon neutral energy for all. We'd reimagine our homes, our streets, our cities and corporations in light of the most pressing needs of the environment. We'd begin to reverse climate change and prevent many, if not most, extinctions. Susan Goldberg wrote about the two contrasting visions in her editor's note for the issue. "It's impossible to know who is right," she said. "Everything will depend on the decisions that we make in the coming days, weeks, months, years, and decades." In our gospel reading this week, Jesus tells the chief priests and elders a parable about some tenants who made some ghastly decisions. Decisions rooted in greed, arrogance, disrespect, and selfishness. A landowner, Jesus says, lovingly planted a vineyard, leased it to some tenants, and travelled to another country. When harvest time came, the landowner sent his servants to the vineyard to collect his share of the produce, but the tenants seized the servants. They beat one, killed another, and stoned the third. And in response, the landowner sent a second group of servants to the vineyard, but the tenants killed them as well. Finally, the landowner decided to send his own son into the fray to reason with the tenants. Surely, the landowner thought, they will respect my son. They did not. When the tenants saw the heir of the vineyard approaching, they hatched a plan to murder him and claim his inheritance. So they seized the son, threw him out of the vineyard, and took his life. Jesus concludes the parable with a question for the chief priests and elders. When the landowner returns to the vineyard, what will he do to those tenants? And hearing all of this, the temple authorities rightly perceive that Jesus is speaking about them. And they set out to find a way to arrest him without provoking the crowds who regard him as a prophet. Notice the intense irony here. Jesus tells the authorities a parable critiquing greedy violence. The authorities pronounce judgment on the parable's protagonists, and then, realizing that the parable is actually about them, they set out to arrest and ultimately kill Jesus. Eugene Peterson, who compiled the Message Bible, also wrote a book called The Contemplative Pastor. In there, he describes parables as time bombs. He says people would have initially seen them as casual, interesting stories about everyday life. With their defences down, these stories would steal into their hearts and imaginations. But then would come the aha moment, when the meaning and the relevance of the story explodes like a time bomb. They realise that Jesus was actually talking about them and God. The parables were meant to blast people into a new awareness and new understandings and transformed lives. That's certainly the case with this one, although the time fuse is shorter than with most. I know that the parable of the wicked tenants, as this story is usually called, isn't straightforwardly about climate change or the environment. Jesus tells this particular story to indict the religious leaders of his day for exploiting and mistreating God's people, the people of Israel, God's vineyard. The parable is meant to expose the corruption of the religious elite and condemn their obsessions with privilege and with power. Through the pointed story of the vineyard, Jesus implies that the chief priests and elders are the wicked tenants. They abuse their authority, dishonour God's house, and mistreat both God's messengers, the prophets, and God's son, Jesus. But at the heart of this parable, though, is a distinction that I think speaks very pointedly to our current environmental crisis. What the tenants in this story neglect to understand, or very deliberately choose to ignore, is that they are stewards rather than owners of the vineyard. When the landowner asks for his rightful share of the harvest, the tenants take offence, as if the vineyard belongs to them and it is the landowner who is in the wrong for making a claim on the land at all. Somewhere along the way, the tenants have forgotten their place, their vocation, their standing in relationship to both the land and the landowner. To put it bluntly, they have forgotten that they own nothing, nothing at all. Everything belongs to the landowner. Theirs is not a vocation of ownership. It is a vocation of caring, tending, safeguarding, cultivating, and protecting on behalf of another. It's worth noticing here that Jesus does not describe the evildoers in this story as thieves or marauders. They are not outsiders. They are the landowner's trusted tenants. He chose them and granted them creative license to steward the vineyard for the benefit of all. How much more tragic, then, that they abuse the landowner's trust so cruelly. The analogy I'm drawing, of course, is obvious. Have we not, like the tenants in the parable, deluded ourselves into thinking that we own the earth and all that's in it, when in fact we are meant to be stewards only? Have we not, like the tenants, assumed that God is absent or apathetic or uninvolved and hoarded the beauty and bounty of creation for our own selfish ease, gain, comfort, and convenience? Have we not, like the tenants, ignored and even maligned the countless messengers who have warned us over the past many years that our greedy relationship with the planet will lead us to destruction? Wendell Berry, the American poet and novelist and farmer, suggested that the way we treat the environment is a reflection of our spiritual health. The truth is that we humans crave ownership. We like possessing things. We like controlling things. We like believing that things exist primarily to please, feed, entertain, soothe, empower, and protect us. Most of us assume that we're entitled to keep what we've earned. After all, we worked for it. We earned our money and our possessions, so they belong to us. If somebody tries to take what is ours, we feel justified in doing whatever it takes to protect our property. We are rent to own folks by both temperament and preference, and the idea that we don't own anything deeply offends us. Stewardship deeply offends us, insults our core sense of entitlement, and threatens our core identity as consumers. Here's a helpful comment from Bruce Pruer, the late Australian pastor and writer of the book Australian Psalms. The bottom line of the parable is clear. God is the owner who has built up this world from nothing. There is no other owner. It belongs solely to God. We are only like tenants or share farmers or stewards within this vulnerable creation. Whenever we forget our significant yet lowly position, we are in trouble, and so is the vineyard. If we puff ourselves up and get sucked into the delusion that we are masters of this world, then we become a destructive force. No longer are we a blessing, but a blight on the earth. This is the case even when creation itself exposes the ridiculousness of our stingy notions of ownership. I have seen news stories about people actually going to court because they want to own the part of the Pacific Ocean visible outside their living room windows. I've heard of neighbours fighting over who owns the 500-year-old tree on the border between their properties. What does it mean to own the sea? What does it even mean to own a tree that existed before your great-grandparents were born and that will outlast your great-grandchildren by several centuries? Jesus reminds us that, strictly speaking, we never own anything. Everything we have, including the fruits of our labour, belongs to God. The creation is God's. Whatever treasure we have in this life is God's. We have it only on loan. As John Ortberg puts it, in drawing an analogy with the board game Monopoly, when the game is over, it goes back in the box. We have to let it go. When it comes to the planet, the bottom line is crystal clear in Scripture. We are not owners. We are caretakers of a vineyard God cares deeply about, a vineyard that will not thrive or survive if we continue to treat it as a cheap, inexhaustible commodity. One need only glance at environmental news headlines to recognise how precarious our situation really is. 8.8 million tonnes of plastic waste enter the ocean each year. A quarter of all mammals are currently threatened with extinction. Sea levels will rise by 1.6 metres by 2100, which means for our Pacific Island neighbours, they won't have a home. For Tuvalu, a rise of 20 centimetres. So 1.6 by 2100. So 20 centimetres will make their country uninhabitable. This week, Christians around the world celebrated the Feast of St. Francis of Assisi, commemorating the life of a 12th century monk who cared deeply about creation. And today, after the 10 o'clock service, many of us will gather near the playground over there at Jamison to bless the animals, recognising God's care for the creatures that live among us. We might also want to pray for what the Book of Common Prayer calls this fragile earth, our island home. This year, perhaps more than ever before, I think many of us will flinch at that adjective, fragile. Living in a sunburnt country, a land of sweeping plains as I do, I'll admit that I'm flinching this week. We are just at the beginning of bushfire season, and this week's fires down the south coast and Victoria remind us of that horrible season just before COVID, and because of the smoke pollution, we literally couldn't breathe the air outside our homes for weeks. We have been told this week by the New South Wales Premier and the Chief Fire Person that the upcoming bushfire season will be severe. I want very much to believe in the optimistic half of the National Geographic's April magazine. And as a Christian, I do believe that the earth will be renewed and restored, and there will be abundant flourishing, as depicted in my new stall, abundant flourishing. That somehow God's coming kingdom will bring healing to all, even to all creation. But I don't for one minute think that we, the stewards, are somehow off the hook because the landowner will ultimately come to reclaim his vineyard. On the contrary, the prophetic line drawn in the parable is not between Jews and Christians, as this parable has been interpreted in the past, or between Jewish Jesus followers and non-Jesus followers, but rather those who bear fruit or produce fruit of the kingdom and those who do not. Like the prophets before him, Jesus draws the line in terms of action. There are countless ways, small and large and everything in between, to steward our fragile island home, to be a people who will produce fruit. This week's passage from Exodus gives us some clues of fruit production. God gives Israel the gift of the law as a mode of ongoing covenantal interaction, an opportunity for us to listen to God and to live out that listening every day in everything we do. Once these commandments are heard in this loving relational way, they become less a list of imperatives and more a collection of indicatives, descriptions of what graceful, dignified human life looks like. In this way, the famous refrain, "You shall not," may not ring as a domineering injunction, but rather as a vivid portrait of a fruitful garden. Our vocation is lifelong, and our relationship to the landowner is eternal. Unfortunately, reclaiming the vineyard will always meet with opposition from those who have a vested interest in keeping the vineyard broken. So our calling isn't even close to over. When we hoard, exploit, abuse, or ignore the work of God's hand, we wound and reject God's heart. If nothing else this week, just sit with the possibility that we own nothing. Not this planet, not our ministries, not our churches, not even our own lives. All of it is God's, and all of it is precious beyond reckoning. I close with a one-sentence banger from Barbara Brown Taylor. The tenants killed the son, but he would not stay dead. And to this day, he is haunting the vineyard, reminding us that we are God's guests. Welcome on this earth and welcome to it, so long as we remember whose it is and how it is to be used.